This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 202.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Family Gamers Podcast. Welcome into our little home. We are delighted to come to you this week. It's a special episode this week.
Oh yeah?
It is, because it's, like you said, episode 202.
Okay.
202 is a Smith number.
Hey, we're Smiths.
We are Smiths.
Cool.
Yeah, so a Smith number is any number where its digit sum and the sum of digits of its prime factors are equal. What does that mean? Well, 202, there's a 2 and a 0 and a 2. That adds up to 4.
4.
The prime factors of 202 are 101, prime number, and 2, prime number.
And so then you add a 2 and a 1 and a 0 and a 1, and you get 4.
4, and that's a Smith number.
Okay, not nearly as exciting as I was hoping for, but it's got a nice name.
Also, because of its name, it's totally awesome. This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
We're not biased or anything.
This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. So, Anitra, guess what?
What?
The day this show comes out, everybody's got 2 days left until they have to file their taxes.
Yeah, if you haven't filed already, for whatever reason, get on that.
So, did you know that a new tax law has just gone into effect? One of the many changes allows you to delay your required minimum distributions from retirement accounts until the year you turn 72. That's a couple years away from me.
A few.
If that sounds like gobbledygook to you, and you are near retirement, you might want to set up a call with First Move Financial by going to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers. They are happy to have a quick conversation about your retirement needs to see if they can help you. Thank you so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show. So this week on the show, we are going to begin a new series. I don't really know what we're going to call it. I think for now we're going to call it Room to Grow. What do you think about that?
Sure.
Yeah, it works for you?
It works.
Awesome. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a game mechanic, a primary game mechanic.
Or a genre.
Sure. And we're going to take a look at three games, a very simple, like, beginner game. And when we think about this, we're thinking about this in the context of family. So yeah. While it could apply to non-gamers starting to learn how to play games, we're really specifically focusing this on kids. And you'll see that when we talk about these first games, and we'll talk about why we chose the games that we chose. But what we're going to do is we're going to choose a very introductory game, and then maybe once they've got kind of a handle on that game, something a little bit more complex, and then something a little bit more complex than that, all within this, in this case, engine builder genre. And we're doing this because a lot of people are like, how do I get my kids into games? Well, it depends on a whole lot of things, but one of those things is trying to identify games that are really simple and can really break down to something that's very straightforward. And by having a ramp up like this, we think it'd be helpful.
So that's what we're going to talk about, and we'll see how well it works and how well it goes over.
You know, in choosing engine builders this week, first of all, I chose it because we got a copy of Wingspan, and we're going to be talking about that a bit.
Yeah,
but
a little bit.
I did not expect there to be as much controversy as there is.
So let's table that and talk about it when we talk more about the topic, because as always, we're going to start off the show by talking about what we've been playing.
Well,
and you kind of gave it away.
I did. I mean, that's only one of the things that we've been playing.
True.
So, yeah. So we got a copy of Wingspan.
Woohoo! And you know what? The hype is, for the most part, deserved. It's a really good game.
It's a good game. I don't want to say it's not a good game. Honestly, totally truthfully, I don't think any game deserves the type of insanity that some games seem to get. And Wingspan is one of those games.
Sure. I mean, I guess maybe I'm biased because it's so nice to see a game getting lots of hype that is neither super heavy, Twilight Imperium, anyone? Nor themed around something violent, like Blood Rage and Scythe, although it turns out Scythe is not that violent, but it thematically looked like it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Wingspan is about birds. I mean, birds who occasionally eat other birds, but mostly eat other things.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, we played this game with some friends last night. We played it a couple times over the course of last week.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our friends, neither one of them had ever played it before. And one of them was like, you know what? I like this game.
Sigh.
Which is pretty funny. Because I totally understood where he was coming from. You know what I mean? I totally understood.
I kind of feel like you could have said the same thing the first time you played.
No, I expected the game. I don't think a game can win Kennerspiel and be a bad game.
Fair.
Right. And I don't have enough hate in my heart and vitriol and curmudgeonness, even though I wish I had enough curmudgeonness, but I just don't, to like really poop on a game that won Kenner and be like, whatever. I don't know. I expected it to be a good game.
And it's a good game.
I would have been surprised if it truly blew me away. I definitely think the production quality is exceptional in this game.
I'm going to say, because of everything I had heard about it, I won't say that Wingspan blew me away, but it's definitely growing on me the more I play it. Like, my first time playing it was like, oh, that was nice. Like, I had fun. And then I was like, I want to play again.
Yeah.
And I want to play some more. Right. I want to try some different strategies.
Well, one of the things about Wingspan, and this is probably part of because of who we are and what we do, this is definitely a game that benefits from getting played a lot of times.
Yes,
at least
there
in
are
terms of your enjoyment
of
and experience and things like that. This is an engine builder where you have to iterate through the game in order to really grok the engine and figure out how to get things that'll play well together and talk about strategies and all this other stuff. And we don't play singular games tons of times. It's just
not something
that we're able to do right now. And this summer, and especially with all of this COVID-19 stuff, we've definitely been able to start to play games a little bit more. And that has actually helped with that, right? That ability
to go back and dig in a little bit more, certain games more,
because we've got to get our plays in for review stuff.
Always.
But then we've got extra time, so we can then turn around and go back to games that we've said we've played once or twice and said we want to play this more. And Wingspan is an example of that. The fact that we played this multiple times in the last week.
Yeah.
Right? That's just not normal. And it's a game that benefits. And so it's been good. And I'm glad that we've been able to do that.
All right, well, let's not spend all our time talking about Wingspan.
It's only been a couple of minutes.
We also played Unlock Squeak and Sausage, I think it was called.
Yeah, so the Unlock series, these are Escape Room in a Box. These are reusable. It's a deck of cards that has an accompanying app. So this is not like Exit where you have to cut things up or bend things or whatever. There's two of these clown-themed Unlock games, and they're not like creepy clowns.
I mean, he's a clown, but he's more like a mad scientist. So the clown aspect is just to lighten it up a little bit. It's not creepy clown.
Right, right. And it was fine. I mean, I definitely think the Exit boxes I like a little bit better. But I also really appreciate the fact that I can do an Unlock box and then give it to someone or send it to someone.
I feel like the Unlock adventure boxes have just been more uneven. Like, some of them have been great and some of them have been awful, and some of them are like this where it's like, yeah, that was fun.
Well, there's even things like the Wizard of Oz one where it was like 70% awesome and 30% terrible.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's really, really uneven. We've got some more. I'm looking up on the shelf. I think we've got like 4 or 5 more Unlock boxes that we still have to do, and an Exit box.
Well, and our kids have now shown us that it's something they generally enjoy doing. The problem with Unlock and Exit is that, especially in a group with 2 adults and 2 to 3 kids, we as the adults want to take over, and then one or more kids can start feeling left out.
I think we're a little bit more conscientious about that. And there were certainly times when we were looking at stuff and our kids picked things up in this last Unlock box, which was awesome, because that's really what I want to see. But I think you're right, especially with one of our children who's just a little bit less observant.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to feel a little bit left out when we do these.
And that's it.
So something to be mindful of.
All right, let's see what else. I've been playing a fair bit of Quirky Circuits, trying to get ready to review that. That'll be out in a couple of weeks. We're still not quite there.
I got a chance to sit down with Asher and play Valeria Card Kingdom. So I had played it solo last week.
Mm-hmm, which still shocks me.
Sit down and play with him, and we had a good time.
Yeah, it seemed like you guys really enjoyed it.
Yep, it's fun. One of the things I really like about this game is the fact that when you roll the 2 dice, unlike Machikoro, where you just take the total and move on, you count each die and the total of the two of them together.
Yeah, so you've got several different options of things you
can do. It's not even options. You do them all.
Sure.
And I like that a lot.
Been playing some other real lightweight games with the kids, like Marshmallow Test and Super Cats. Super Cats is going to be a big hit. It's definitely shaping up that way.
I mean, it already is a big hit.
I don't want to talk it to death, but we're having a lot of fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually tweeted out when we played Baron Park with both expansions that are in the Bad News Bears box.
Yeah, the Grizzlies and the Monorail.
Yeah, that was great. I did not anticipate that playing with both expansions would feel so fun and not as overwhelming as I thought it would.
Yeah, I knew it was going to feel fun. We loved that game so much. It was just a question of whether or not it was going to feel overwhelming and drag the game out. And it didn't do that.
It didn't drag it out any more than doing one or the other of the expansions. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that using both expansions gave you a lot more room to try different strategies.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that wholeheartedly. So that was Baron Park, the Bad News Bears expansion for Baron Park. We're going to probably do a snap for that expansion at some point in the not too distant future as well.
Soon.
Yes, very soon. We also played some Tussie Mussie with our friends last night after we introduced them to Wingspan. We figured, here's an easier Elizabeth Hargrave game since it's 12:30 in the morning.
I mean, we start talking about Elizabeth Hargrave, and we also had mentioned to these friends that we're seriously considering picking up Mariposas.
Oh, I pre-ordered it today, by the way.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so that's done.
Because Elizabeth Hargrave's designs have already proven themselves to just be good, fun, and unusual.
I mean, willing to take the chance more or less sight unseen at this point. Yeah.
Also, speaking of Tussie Mussie, I finally got around to teaching myself how to play the solo version with the solo expansion.
Sweet.
And that was fun.
Sweet.
It feels a lot like playing against another person, which I always like in my solo games.
Yeah, that's what you said last week. Well, talking about button shy games, of which Tussie Mussie is one, today we got in the mail our copy of Desert Pack, which was done by Gwen Ruel and Sam Bryant, who are the makers of Fire Tower.
Yeah, also known as Runaway Parade games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it doesn't say Runaway Parade on the box or on the envelope. It says Gwen and Sam.
Gwen and Sam. I was a little surprised by this. Like, I knew it was going to be a combat-ish kind of game.
It's a bluff combat game.
Yeah. I did not expect that all 18 cards were going to be identical.
Well, I mean, it makes things like sorting pretty easy. And for someone like me, who sorts their bills and makes sure they're all facing the same way and all that stuff, it's great.
Yes. But I actually really liked it once we got into it. So every card has a tired coyote on one side, and then on the other side has two coyotes in different orientations, depending on which way you orient the card. It's like, I think, alert and howling.
Yeah, that's what they are.
And so the idea is that you go back and forth with your opponent, or opponents, and you're attacking and then defending. The attacker states how many coyotes they're going to attack with, although they can bluff and choose a number lower than what they actually said. And then the defender can put up to that many cards out. Defenders get to choose from, so they're pulling cards off their deck one at a time, so they get to look at them first, but they don't get to change anything around. You just decide, am I actually defending with this coyote, or am I letting him rest? Resting coyotes basically get upgraded, but defending coyotes either get downgraded, or if they're already tired when they're defending, they end up getting discarded from the game.
Yeah, so you have the option to acknowledge that you're going to overextend some coyotes. And when you do that, they are bye-bye.
Yeah, and it's just this back and forth, back and forth. The attacker always wants to have a few more stars indicating like coyote health than the defender, so they can get some points. And it's supposed to be the first player to 10 points wins, unless somebody completely exhausts all their coyotes and has to discard them all, in which case probably the other player is going to win, probably, because they get points for all the coyotes left in their deck. So it took a turn or two for us to wrap our heads around it, but I think it's going to get a fair amount of play.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's light and easy to understand. It doesn't require a couple of extra components, which sometimes button shy games require.
I mean,
I did have a problem a little bit with the graphic design because I kept counting the stars wrong, but that might just be because I'm an idiot. I mean, that's possible.
Or it might just be getting used to it, too.
Possibly. I did start to pick up on some of the strategic things, and I don't know, maybe it was your tendencies, and I kind of was cluing in on your tendencies, but at near the end of the game, I started to figure out I can either hold back or I can go for it and have a pretty good feeling for what you were going to do in response. Mm-hmm. So that allowed me, by the end of the game, I basically said, all right, it's just...
I only need 3 more points.
Full on, say 4, go 4. And I knew I had a Howling Coyote, which is worth 2 stars instead of the other thing, which are worth 1. So I just kind of basically was willing to sacrifice tired coyotes in order to seal up the win.
Sure.
So it seemed to work out.
I asked Asher to play a game with me, and I let him pick, and he picked Skulk Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already talked about this game several times before. We're really, really enjoying it. It's this cool asymmetric 2-player duel.
So the review for this game is going to come out the same day as this podcast. Yeah.
So I'm not going to beat it to death or anything, but it's real fun, you guys.
Yes, it's real really fun. Good. Go to thefamilygamers.com. Check out the review for Skulk Hollow. It's a good review. Well, I don't know. Let me clarify here. The review is fine. I wrote it. It's a review for a game that we think is very good.
Yes.
How's that?
That's a better way to put it.
It's a good review, you guys. Come on. Anyway, so who did you play as?
Asher asked me to be the Foxen.
Okay.
And he played as Tanthos. I think Tanthos is probably our favorite, even though he's the hardest to win with.
Okay. Well, I mean, you beat me as Tanthos, so maybe I'm just terrible at that game. Or you're really good at playing with him.
I think
I'm... wait, but Asher played as him.
Yeah, Asher played as Tanthos. And to give him credit where it's due, he remembered that Tanthos has 2 ways he can win, either by getting out all his roots or by still killing the leader of the Foxen. So he worked on the roots, but when he had opportunities, he stripped away all the protection from around the king, who I had out. And it was down to, if I had not managed to beat him on the turn that I did, he probably would have managed to get the king on the next turn and win. So he did real well.
I'm sure he was still super annoyed about losing, though.
Oh, he was annoyed because I thwarted all his plans. It was wonderful.
It's funny. I got a cop to this one. I might as well. I played a game of Ticket to Ride on the iPad the other day. I usually do this to like wind down. It's like my before bed routine. I play a game of Ticket to Ride on the iPad. I scored my lowest score I think I've ever scored in Ticket to Ride in the history of me ever playing Ticket to Ride ever.
Oh, really?
Yes. My score was 2 at the end of the game.
What?
2.
2?
2.
How do you even get a score that low?
All of my routes were cross-country routes, and everything was connected except for one connection in the middle. And so nothing was connected.
Oh, no.
Because I had everything for the connection, and then that connection would get taken. And then I would go up or down, because it was right in the middle, to take another one, and then that one would get taken. And it was just like, it was like the game knew what I was trying, like, you know what I mean? And it was just like, I just could not connect them no matter what I did over and over and over again. It was probably 4 or 5 different times the route that I was about to take got taken just to make that final connection. And so I lost... I had like 70 points, and I lost basically all of it in incomplete routes, and it was terrible. It was pretty awful.
Wow.
So you can all mock me.
No, good news, though. You're likely never going to score that low again.
Probably not. I immediately played a second game and destroyed it. So I felt better about myself. I mean, I'm playing against the AI, and honestly, the AI in Ticket to Ride is not that great. It's probably the worst part of the iPad app. Everything else about it is fantastic. But so... figure if I'm going to stink that bad, I might as well confess it to everybody.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So we've also got a little bit of news to share.
Yeah, this is actually a couple of weeks old, and I just didn't mention it.
So it's olds?
Yes, it's olds. Old news, but not fake news, just old news.
Okay.
And I just neglected to mention it because we had guests, and then we had the episode 200 extravaganza.
Oh, yeah.
So the Kinderspiel des Jahres winner for 2020 was announced, and I was shocked to find out it was not a Hobby game, because it's been a Hobby game for the last few years. Not only is it not a Hobby game, but the publisher, Lifestyle Board Games, has never won a Spiel before.
Huh.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. It's a really cool looking game where they use like it looks like a tennis ball, and you roll the tennis ball, and you use basically Velcro to mimic a hedgehog collecting apples, mushrooms, and leaves. It's adorable.
Very cute. You didn't even mention the name of it. The name of the game is Speedy Roll.
Did I not say the name of the game?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Speedy Roll, Wind, 2020, Kinderspiel des Jahres. Sorry about that. And the Kennerspiel and the regular SDJ will be announced, I think, on the 20th of July. So we will have them soon. For you for episode 204, not for episode 203.
Sure.
But we'll make sure to bring those to you so you can come here and hear it first from the Family Gamers if you want to.
All right. Well, on that note, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about Room to Grow with Engine Builders.
We will court controversy with Room to Grow.
I'd probably.
All right, we'll be right back.
Subby Bunny.
What are you doing?
Subby Bunny.
You're supposed to wait for the marshmallows.
That's my marshmallow test. The Chubby Bunny marshmallow test.
No, this is the Stanford marshmallow test.
Oh.
An experiment on delayed gratification that was first performed in 1972.
Oh. I mean, this was the marshmallow test that I did in college.
Not the marshmallow test we're talking about today.
This is a snap review for Marshmallow Test, a simple trick-taking game designed by, who else but Reiner Kinesia, based on his earlier game Voodoo Prince. Plays 2 to 5 players in about 20 minutes, and the box says ages 10 plus, although I think we can play a little bit younger.
Marshmallow Test is published by GameRight. So let's talk about how to play.
Every player gets a hand of 12 cards to start, and the dealer starts the first trick. They play a card from their hand. All other players must play a card of the same color if they have it. The player who played the highest number in that color wins the trick.
Whoever won sets those cards aside and starts the next trick. When any player reaches the target number of tricks won, 3 tricks in a 4 or 5 player game, all the way up to 6 tricks in a 2-player game, they immediately go out. They cannot play in any more tricks this round, and they receive marshmallow points equal to the number of tricks that all other players have won so far.
That means the second to last player to go out in the round is going to receive the most points, because that last player gets nothing.
They get 0 points for the round.
That last player becomes the dealer for the next round, but starting with the second round, the dealer also chooses a trump suit after they look at their cards.
For those who aren't familiar, a trump suit is a color that is declared to always win, no matter what color card started the trick.
The rounds continue until one player has accumulated 20 marshmallow points, and the game immediately ends. So that's it. Marshmallow Test is a very simple game. What do we think about it?
It's a very basic trick-taking game. In fact, I would say it's an excellent introduction to trick-taking because it's so simple. There's no special powers or anything like that. Kids can learn the basics here, including how to lose a trick on purpose.
Which is very important in this game of delayed gratification.
Yeah, you'll want to lose some tricks because to get the most points, you want everyone else to have several tricks before you go out.
The Stanford Marshmallow Experiment was all about delayed gratification, and so is this game. It feels good to win a trick or two, but it feels even better to go out when you know that you can get a handful of marshmallow tokens.
But don't wait too long. The last person standing always gets nothing.
And that actually leads us into the thing that we probably like the least about this game, even though it's a necessary part of what happens, is that last player getting nothing. This is the classic example of a high-stakes event. You get so close to victory, and then you lose.
Yeah, every round has a loser, and usually that big loser is in that situation of they have set themselves up to win the maximum points and end up with nothing.
It can be very hard for kids to lose in this way. So if this is something that your kids are prone to get frustrated by, it's definitely something to be aware of.
On the flip side, if you play it too safely in Marshmallow Test, you won't get very many points and you'll spend a lot of time waiting around while everybody else continues to play.
But the high stakes are the only hard part for our kids. The recommended age on this is 10 plus, but there's no reading in this game, and the only thing on the cards is numbers from 1 to 12 and some pictures of marshmallows. We played this all the way down to 6 years old. We played with our 6-year-old. So kids who have basic numeracy skills, they can compare higher numbers and lower numbers, should be able to pick this game up pretty easily.
At two players, Marshmallow Test becomes an intense mind game. Who's going to go out first? And can they do it while managing to get 4 or 5 points?
Remember, the game ends at 20 points. That's still true in a two-player game, but you're going to 6 tricks before someone goes out. So, Anitra, does this trick-taking game really need the Marshmallow Test theme?
No.
No, not at all. It's completely pasted on, but we appreciate the allusions to it on the cards, and our kids love those squishy marshmallows.
The squishy marshmallow point tokens are definitely one of the best parts of the game.
Very, very appreciated by our fun-loving children, and they're good and safe to play with. So, Anitra, what are we going to rate Marshmallow Test from GameRight?
For a nice introductory trick-taking game, I think we're going to give it 3.5 out of 5 marshmallows.
Okay. And that's Marshmallow Test
in a snap. And we're back.
Hello, everybody. We're back. So we're going to talk about engine builders.
So why don't we start with, what is an engine builder?
So I said earlier on the show that we were courting controversy with this conversation. And that wasn't really intentional, but I'm going to start with this very concise definition of an engine builder that I found on the internet. It says, engine building, a game system in which player actions become stronger or more effective over time.
Sure.
Oh, you don't like that definition?
It's too pithy. If you're talking about that, then there are many, many things that can kind of fit under that umbrella that maybe have engine building aspects, but we wouldn't call an engine builder game.
Okay.
Like a deck builder.
All right, so we'll talk about deck builders then. So one person in our Family Gamers community, because we posted a question about this, because we were debating this over the course of...
The last couple of days.
Yeah.
Yep.
Somebody pointed out that a lot of deck builders are kind of engine builders, and that's kind of true, but for me at least, and in my thoughts when I kind of went through this whole exercise, engine builders can't be deck builders in the sense that deck builders heavily rely on chance.
I mean, some engine builders do too?
Yeah, in fact, but our intro engine builder is a dice-chucking engine builder, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think there's something about deck builders versus engine builders that's a little bit different to me. I don't know.
Well, let me put it this way. I look at an engine builder as the structure of your turn is the same every time, but as time goes on in the game, based on the decisions you have made, you either get to do more things on your turn or more powerful things on your turn. Based on the decisions you have made. Because I've played games where, like, you get to do more and more each turn, but it's just kind of everybody gets to do more stuff.
Mm-hmm. The idea of an engine builder for me is it's out in front of you and it's got moving parts within it and it's doing all of this stuff, as opposed to a deck builder where you're piling up your resources that you're going to
and you're hoping
out.
You pull, you know, the things that you want to play.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess there's some merit to this conversation because we're having such a difficult time defining the difference between the two.
Well, I would say that something that came up in the Family Gamers community is that a lot of games that we would call good games or engaging games have some aspect of engine building to them.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think the more the hobby continues to grow, the more these straightforward applications of genres will continue to blend. I just think that's a necessity. Yeah.
Well, and I think by that merit, deck building games and bag building games are sort of specialized variations on engine building.
Mm-hmm. I think bag building games are great. They're really, really fun, like Quacks.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. It's good stuff.
Meanwhile, I'm chuckling over here because Fire in the Library is a type of bag building game.
Yeah, but you're building fire into the bag, and that's not good.
You're making the bag worse over time, which is kind of hilarious to me.
So anyway, our desire with this episode was to focus on engine builders.
Ones where your engine is out in front of you, where everybody can see it.
Yeah. And like I said earlier on the show, we really did want to focus on something where the introduction game is something that we think could be introduced to a younger audience. And that doesn't mean a 3-year-old.
No, but if you're like, I have never played an engine builder, or I want to show my kids how to play engine builders, but they've never played anything like an engine builder before, where should I start?
Right. And so let's just get right into this. So a lot of people felt like Splendor was the most simple engine builder that they could imagine. And I definitely understand that.
It's very simple. It's very straightforward. You and I actually talked about Century Golem Edition, but that's more complicated than Splendor because there's a little bit more of exchanging and goals, and the goals keep changing up, which in Splendor they don't.
Mm. And I've got to be honest with you, I don't love Splendor. We used to own Splendor, and I didn't feel like we needed to own it anymore. And so I guess for my personal preferences, that's part of the reason why it wasn't my go-to for this one.
Sure. I think it's a reasonable first choice.
Yes, I absolutely do.
But
for us, we chose Machikoro.
Yeah, so Machikoro has a lot of these engine builder ideas that you are making choices for what you want to focus on or what you want to diversify into to get more resources, to build more stuff, to get more resources, to build more stuff.
Now, I'm going to say this up front, since this is basically a tacit recommendation for the game, that if you want to pick up Machikoro, I would recommend picking it up either with the Harbor expansion or just picking up the Machikoro Bright Lights Big City version of the game. And the reason why is because the market variant is significantly better in the expansion, which is boiled into Bright Lights Big Cities.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing with any good engine builder is everything's going to be out in front of you. And it's easy to talk through with your kids and help them as much as they want help as they make decisions. So in Machikoro, historically, we have a child who tends to focus on, I want this one kind of building. I'm going to save up my money till I get that kind of building. And sometimes it's a, well, you know what? If you bought a cheaper building or two with that money, that will actually help you get money faster and start getting their head in that mindset of, don't just sit there and try to save up for the big thing you want. The whole point of an engine builder is to keep chipping away at it little by little so you can do more and more.
And this is one of those things, and this might sound a little bit weird, but I think that it's easier to explain to a kid some of these more direct concepts, even though there might be more pieces involved, than the way that you talk about Splendor and, well, if you get this stuff, then it discounts what you can buy later and things like that. And you could just say, okay, well, there's a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5, and a 6. So if you get all those numbers, you're usually going to get something. And it's just easier to imprint those thoughts on the mind of a child than all the discount stuff that you get in Splendor. And so when we talk about this, and I almost am thinking it's like 1 and 1A with Splendor versus Machikoro, if you're teaching a non-gamer who's an adult, Splendor is probably an easier game for them.
Yes, because there's fewer different things going on. I mean, every building in Machikoro is a little different.
But if you're teaching, now your child has to be a reader, if you're teaching a reader child, I think it's easier to get their head around the very direct, if I roll this number, I get this thing, and I need to get the money to buy the other thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's ultimately why I talked so much about the context in which we're approaching this and why I'm saying Machikoro is the one and Splendor is the 1A versus the other way around or something like that.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with the idea that Splendor is a very basic engine building game, but just because of the way that we're doing this, that's kind of the way I landed.
Yeah. Your mileage may vary. There are definitely some kids out there who, especially if they're attracted by that gem theme. I mean, if you have a little boy or girl who has been really enjoying unicorn glitter luck games and is ready for something a little heavier, Splendor might be a better choice than trying to build your little city with dice in Machikoro.
Sure. Sure.
But I think they're both really good choices.
I'll say this. I think the iPad app is good enough for Splendor. Pass and Play iPad app, unless you really have a need to have tangible pieces. First of all, the Splendor box is gigantic for what you get. I just think it's easier to manage with the Pass and Play aspect of the game.
Yeah, but I agree.
Anyway, so that's the first one. So all of that was just to talk about the first one on our list. But don't worry. Once your kids have grown tired of Machikoro or Splendor, there is, in fact, room to grow. And you mentioned the next game on the list.
I did. So a big hit with our kids has been Century Golem Edition, which is really the same thing as Century Spice Road, which Nick wrote a review of for our site however many years ago now.
I think it was a 9.5 or maybe even a 10. Yeah. I mean, he loves that game.
Well, for
good reason.
I don't blame him. I mean, we have the Golem Edition, but it's really good. We really like it. And it's still relatively easy for kids to wrap their mind around, oh, hey, I get gems, I can upgrade gems, I want gems to buy these golems or the goal cards.
So one of the things that makes this a good introductory engine builder, again, a little bit more complex than a Machikoro or a Splendor, is that the game completely separates the mechanic of buying things for victory point purposes from getting things to build up your engine.
Yes.
Right? It's a lot harder in a game where those things are blended. When you talk about games where you have to spend your resources, which are worth points, to get things that are going to get you more points.
Yes.
It's really, really hard. And that's why, like with Machikoro, those coins are not really worth. I mean, they're right. They have like a conversion.
Well, the same thing is true in Century, actually. The gems or the spice cubes, anything other than the lowest value, quote unquote, mm-hmm. one, all the rest are worth 1 point each at the end of the game.
But that's kind of like a throwaway.
Right. It's not a focus. Right. You're not amassing gems or spices to just have a hoard.
Correct. Right.
In fact, you're not allowed to because your little card limits you.
Mm-hmm. But that separation makes it really easy for kids to contextualize, these are my victory points. This is how I build stuff.
Yeah. I get the gems, I get the spices to then build stuff to get my victory points.
So that's the second one in our room to grow for engine builders. So we've got Machikoro / Splendor at the beginning. The next one is Century Golem Edition or Century Spice Road. And the last one, which is really what got us thinking about this, is Wingspan.
Yeah, it's Wingspan.
So Wingspan is not the most complicated engine builder out there. In fact, it's really pretty straightforward, but it does that thing that we just talked about. You are absolutely having to make the decision between a thing that's going to help your engine and a thing that's going to get you victory points.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there's sort of multiple kinds of currency in Wingspan, because there's the food that you need to play out birds, which is also sometimes worth points. And then there's the eggs, which are usually worth points, but you also sometimes need to play out birds. So you're going back and forth, and it's the, you know, well, do I have enough eggs to do this thing I really want to do? Do I need to take an extra turn just to get more eggs? Which will give me more benefits in the long run, but almost like your scarcest resource in Wingspan is your turn count. You're trying to fit as much as possible into the number of turns you have.
Well, and another layer of complexity with Wingspan, which you have a little bit in Machikoro, but you don't have in Century, is sometimes, depending on what people have played, what you do might affect other players. They might benefit from your moves.
Or what they do might affect you.
Right. In fact, in the game we played last night, I made some nesting decisions based on the fact that I knew that other people's cards were going to allow me to do things in those nests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different variables at play, even though the engine builder mechanic is still the primary core focus of the game and it's still fairly straightforward. There's just a lot there. So that's our third in our Room to Grow series is Wingspan. I mean, it's a fantastic game. It's very good. It won the Kenner Spiel des Jahres for a reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And our 11-year-old had no trouble learning the game. She actually enjoyed it. We used the Swift Start pack. It basically tells you what to do for the first four turns. And I got to say, it was great. It was a great way to, you don't have to read the rule book at all. You just start with Swift Start pack and just go.
And by the time you've done these, you know, predetermined turns, you now know how to play the game.
Yeah, and doing what it tells you to do on the cards, it didn't slow anything down.
Yeah.
So we really, really were impressed with that whole thing. And, you know, we referenced the rule book later on in the game when there were some timing things and other stuff like that that we had to get our head around. But I didn't have to sit down and read through the rule book. It was fantastic.
And as far as Room to Grow, if you've gotten to the point that you have played Wingspan with your kids and they're still looking for more complicated things, now you're on your own. Just look, they can probably handle any engine builder out there because Wingspan is straightforward, but there's a lot going on.
And that's pretty much it. Let's dive into a little bit of back talk because what we did, because, you know, we're not the smartest people in the world, is we solicited the Family Gamers community. We got a lot of great feedback on some games that other people might think are excellent engine-building games. So unsurprisingly, we saw a lot of Splendor and a lot of Machikoro.
Nick Martinelli recommended Fantastic Factories.
Yeah, which is a game that he's been trying to get us to buy for like the last year and a half. Someday, Nick, someday. He also recommended Gizmos, which reminds me a lot of Potion Explosion because it's got a little channel of marbles that do stuff.
Yeah, but Gizmos is much more of an engine builder. Yes. Your different marbles do different things, which is pretty cool. Although, that leads me into thinking that Potion Explosion is a simple kind of engine builder because you're pulling the marbles to make the potions. The potions are your points, but the potions also let you do more stuff.
Yeah, but they're single use. It's not an engine. Like, if your car had a single use engine in it, it wouldn't be very
Okay.
But I see where you're going with that. There were a bunch of other comments talking about some games that are actually deck builders. And again, we talked a little bit earlier about whether deck builders or engine builders and this kind of blending of genres. I think we're going to do another one of these specifically on deck builders.
I think so too.
So we're going to hold off on that. Seth Overdeer mentioned The Builders, Middle Ages.
I took a quick look at that. I can't tell if it's what we would have considered an engine builder for this show or not. However, it is available to play freely on Board Game Arena, so I might check it out later.
Well, there you go. We also threw a post over on the Dice Tower Facebook page. We got lots of feedback on there as well. A lot of people recommended Terraforming Mars because the question was not what's the simplest one.
It was just what's your favorite. Yeah.
That gets really into that whole, is it the core mechanic of the game versus is it something that shows up a lot in the game? Terraforming Mars is a pretty complicated game, so it's definitely well past wingspan on the growth chart, so to speak. But lots of other examples. 51st State was mentioned. It's a Wonderful World was mentioned. All sorts of options are really out there. For us, we'll go through them one more time. Our introduction to engine builders, Monte Coro or Splendor. Then Century Spice Road, Century Golem Edition. And then finally,
Wingspan.
Well, we did go out to the community to ask them. But if you weren't part of the community, if you didn't see that post, there's lots of different ways that you can get a hold of us. First, you can go to the Family Gamers community.
Easiest way to get there is go to thefamilygamers.com/community or look for the Family Gamers community on Facebook. Or you could just go to thefamilygamers.com, look for the post for episode 202, leave a comment there.
Yep, you can do that. You can also just look for us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA on all those platforms.
Or you can email us, old school.
You sure can. Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, or leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget, you can send us cool, interesting, gross,
unique
foods for Andrew to eat for science. Send those to The Family Gamers, P.O. Box 528, Auburn, Massachusetts, 01501.
You sure can. Or you can send us notes on Twitter or via email and make recommendations to us for things that we can go out and find, because that happens a lot.
Like too. That awful, awful A&W root beer
powder. That stuff was so gross. Mm-hmm. So gross.
Man.
This episode of the Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Head over to firstmovefinancial.com/Family Gamers to see how First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Well, I think that's going to be it for this week.
Sounds good.
Until next week. Play games with your kids.